charismatic, passionate, has integrity, humble, servant, inspiring, faithful, persevering, positive, flexible, driven.
This is not about theory. This is about application. This is what you're trying to be. This is who we are that call ourselves leaders.
I'm Dave Ramsey, and you're listening to the Entree Leadership Podcast.
Hello, everyone. I'm Chris Hogan, and I have got my good friend and fellow Entree leader, Daniel Tardy, in studio with me. Daniel, how are you?
Hey, buddy. Fantastic. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Listen, we are excited to have you here because I want to dive in and really talk about an area that Dave really, really focuses on. He talks about leaders are readers. Mm-hmm. Now, in that, you and I know that you have to definitely continue to grow yourself. But for you, Daniel, with being here, what do you think Dave's angle is with that?
You know, that's a great question. Dave talks about reading all the time, you know, read, and read everything you get your hands on. I think as leaders, when we hear that, we go, okay, that's good. And there's so much noise out there. What do we read? Why do we read? How often do we need to read? There's book smarts and then there's street smart. So how much does that really translate? And the quote that really kind of summarizes all that for me or really kind of puts energy behind this idea of reading is Charlie Tremendous Jones says that you'll be the same person that you are today in 5 years from now, except for the people you meet and the books that you read.
That's right.
And I go, okay, well, why is that? Why is that the case? And I think, at least in my experience, it's because I default to my old habits. I default to just what I know and what I'm comfortable with. Unless there's something that's probing me with a new thought or new information or, you know, a new way of looking at things. And so certainly relationships with people who have experienced things is very powerful. And then the other way to have new thoughts and ideas is to read a book.
Well, I like what you say about default, because we all like to stay in our comfort zones. They're ours. That's what we know. But when you read a book and it talks about a principle or an aspect, it challenges you first, and then you have to make a decision, am I willing to try this? And so I think in that area, when you push yourself, that's how you're going to get better, and the people around you are going to see your example.
Reading a book should challenge the way that you think. Reading a book should not necessarily just make you feel comfortable about what you're already doing.
Hmm.
And so when we're selecting books and getting recommendations about what books to read, my challenge to leaders and to my friends and to myself is, what is this book or this thought or this idea doing that pushes me outside of that comfort zone? Because that's really when I stretch. That's really when I grow. The places that I look back and I see key places that I was able to move forward in my career and my growth as a leader are not places where I was encouraged. It's places where I was challenged.
Mm.
And I heard a truth and an argument about a certain principle. And I thought, I don't know if I can do that, you know. But as you read through a book, a good author will support this idea and this kind of this new paradigm. And they usually have experience that goes behind that backs that up.
Well, I know for us here, Dave definitely has a core group of books that we have to read. New hires, you got to do that. And I think he does that because he's trying to help people understand our culture better and the expectation.
The expectation here is huge. The bar is very high, and we have what's funny is when you and I started, I think there's only one book that was part of our required reading list, and now there's a lot. I think there's seven of them now.
Yeah.
As we've grown as a company and as we've experienced key turning points and challenges in our organization, what I've seen Dave do is when he gets stuck personally, he goes and finds a book that speaks to that particular challenge. For example, back in 2008, the recession, we all experienced the ramifications of that. We weren't invincible to the recession. The whole economy is kind of in disarray. And what Dave told us in that moment was, hey, we're not going to participate in the recession. You know, we're not going to lower our standards just because that's what's going on around us. Our cheese got moved. He started saying this line, our cheese got moved. And most people are going, what is he talking about? What's this cheese that got moved?
Yep.
And then the punchline was, there's this book, Who Moved My Cheese? And it talks about what happens when your cheese gets moved.
That's right.
You go out and you find a different way of doing things. And so that book at that season in our company became a part of our story and a part of our mandatory reading. And so it embodies a principle that when a new guy comes on today and we're rocking again, the economy's good, we're doing good, we don't want our team and our culture to be absent of that value, because that could come up again. Cheese will get moved again in the future.
It's going to come up again.
So that's why it's a mandatory. So that's an example of why we have mandatory reading, because they're not just things that we want people to do for busy work. They represent a way of thinking with our team. They represent an ideal and a set of expectations. And so if we can download that to somebody in 100 pages or 200 pages and not have to go through it all again and re-experience all the pain and loss that's associated with doing that the first time, we're that much more efficient.
Well, and this month, what we're going to do is we're going to cover four of those books. We're going to do four podcasts that are focusing on four core books for us here at Dave's office. And each of those books bring a principle, bring a fact, bring this growth opportunity for leaders. Now, Daniel, you're also featuring additional stuff on EntreeLeadership.com.
Yeah, absolutely. So we've had this language within Entree Leadership where we've said, we have mandatory books for our team to read. Mm-hmm. Here's the list. And I, you know, the team was talking about it and we got together and we said, you know, we don't really feel like we've done these books at the service they deserve and helped our listeners and our live event attendees, et cetera, understand why we really care about each of these books. So we're going to do deeper dives on each of these books on EntreeLeadership.com that will correlate with the podcast. And so hopefully you hear the podcast, hear about the book, and then go over to EntreeLeadership.com and get some things you can print out, some discussion questions and, you know, kind of deeper insights that you can take your team through some of these discussions around the values that these books represent.
And I tell you, the books, not all of them, we're not talking War and Peace novels here.
That's right.
Some of them are very short and concise, but I tell you, they're packed with great information. And I'm going to tell you, the one we're talking about today is one of the ones that had the most impact on me when I started, and that is QBQ by John Miller. Now, Daniel, we talk about that here, this book, QBQ. When you hear the phrase, what does it automatically call up in your spirit?
Yeah, you're right. In fact, it is something that we go, that person's a QBQer. They're a QBQ guy. We use that language very loosely. So I guess we should explain what those initials stand for.
That's right.
The initials are question behind the question. And the idea is that somebody who asked the question of, well, why can't we do it that way? Or why are those people over there always causing problems? Or why doesn't my computer work the way that it's supposed to? A lot of times the first question is derogatory. It passes the buck. It assigns blame to somebody else.
That's right.
And it offloads personal responsibility. And so the question behind the question is, what could I do to take responsibility? How could I, within what I have the ability to influence, at least make the situation a little bit better?
Well, and I like how you put that, because when I read it, I thought immediately, it snatches my excuses away. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't get to whine. I've got to do something to help improve the situation. And we've heard the phrase a lot, and especially me coming from corporate America, that's not my job. Mm-hmm. And this book really kind of takes that statement out of your vocabulary.
It's hard to say, especially if you come from that background. I think it's hard to say that.
Yes. You know? Oh, yes.
Or I guess to not say that.
Right. Absolutely.
That's an easy way to kind of push it on down the line and hope that it gets taken care of somewhere else.
Well, the prime example, me being here early on, was, you know, with us loading the truck. Mm-hmm. Okay, and I'm out there, and all men go to shipping, and we would load it for events. And I look up, and Dave's out there.
Loading the truck.
And I asked someone, I'm like, why is Dave out here? And they looked at me as if I were crazy. They were like, because it said all men to shipping. And for me, accountability side, for a leader, for him to be out there matching his effort with his words is consistency. And so he was there doing that, supporting it. It just spoke volumes about our culture to me.
It's a huge thing for a leader to do that, because what you experienced at that moment was Dave communicating that he is personally committed to this value,
yes,
of taking responsibility. He doesn't have it in his vocabulary to say, it's not my job. Now, should Dave work in shipping all day? Is that the best use of the time for a CEO who's in charge of strategy and all? No, that's not the point. But if you spent an hour of your week as the leader and dedicated it to communicating these values to your team, and sometimes technically there could have been a, quote, better use of your time, I would challenge that there really wasn't a better use of your time, because the multiplying effect, the force multiplier of your whole team embracing that principle and being on board with taking personal responsibility drastically increases the efficiency of the organization.
It sure does, because people not only see that you're willing to, so they want to pitch in. They want to join that. And we all know, especially here on the podcast, the job of a leader is to go first. Now, one of the stories in here that really made me chuckle was the story of the coffee pot.
Mm-hmm.
You know, talking about going in, trying to get coffee, and there is none. He alerts the store clerk, and the store clerk immediately says, well, that's not my job. Coffee is her job. And we've all been in situations like that. And you look at it and you say, okay, I'm not looking to who to blame. Yeah. I want coffee.
Right. That the customer doesn't care.
Right.
That's what's funny. We spend all this time on our org charts and, well, that's their department and, you know, we don't take care of that and you got to go see someone. I mean, how many times have you been in a store and they point? Well, yeah, it's over there. Or you're going to have to go see customer service about that. And they pass you a lot. We hate that. Or you call into a company and you get transferred four times. The customers don't care about your org chart. They don't care about your job description. The customer sees your whole company, and whether you're the secretary or the CEO, you equally represent the customer's experience. And so as leaders, we've got to be maniacal about thinking through the whole experience from the customer's perspective and making sure that our team gets that, that our team represents us equally and doesn't go, well, I can't help you out.
Well, Dave does that. He empowers us. He deputizes us to take care of things. If someone has an issue with a product that was shipped, or someone's looking for something, he tells us, fix it. We'll walk through the details of it later, but for the customer's sake. And so for us, you really see that the customer literally is put first. And I think it says a lot as a leader for you to not only speak that, but also to show it with your actions. One of the things that in the book that he talks about is IQs, incorrect questions. And that we are naturally, I think, wired to ask questions like that. But when you look at it, they're the opposite of anything related to personal accountability. And so for people out there, as you hear those, the incorrect questions are things where you're asking why someone else isn't getting the job done, or when are they going to fix this? And I think you start to be aware of those questions and you verbalizing them, you can catch yourself and you can change your mindset and what you're asking and how you ask.
Chris, questions are so powerful. Tony Robbins says the quality of your life is dictated by the quality of the questions that you ask. And I would contend the quality of your organization is dictated by the quality of the questions that your team is asking. And that's what you're getting at here, isn't it?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
So what's a negative question? Why does a question make such a big difference in whether we're having a quality experience or a negative experience?
Well, to me, I think it's because you're drawing attention to what's not available or what's not being done, and you're assigning blame. And I think whenever you do that, you kind of let yourself off the hook. Mm-hmm. And so now you're raising yourself up and you're pulling someone else down when you do that. And so instead of asking why the company isn't doing X, Y, or Z, one of the things that he really harps on in here is being focused on what can I do to improve it? You know, so accept the blame and accept the opportunity that you have to fix it.
So can you imagine an organization where every team member is asking all day long, what can I do to help? What can I do to fix it? What can I do to contribute? Maybe I can't fix the whole thing, but could I call a meeting with the right people and ask how we could solve this problem? An organization like that can outwork another company that's five times their size.
I totally agree with you.
And we experienced that here at our company. I feel like we've always, ever since I can remember, done twice the work that a typical company would do with the same number of employees or team members.
Now, I know in here he gives us tips on the types of questions to ask and those not to ask, the IQs. And so, Daniel, can you give us that kind of examples of the things to avoid and the things then that we do need to ask?
Yeah, you bet. John Miller actually lays out a few of these questions here, and he gives us some guidelines. These aren't necessarily perfect things where every one of these words leads to a negative or positive question respectively, but generally a negative question may start with a why. Why can't they do their job? Why can't they show up on time? Why are they always sending this to me when they know that so-and-so is supposed to get the order, right? You know, why? It's just coming out of your mouth. It sounds whiny. Why? You know,
it really does.
And so when you ask why, be very careful. Now, if you're saying, you know, why are we doing it this way so that I can understand better how we could do it better? You know, I mean, that's a little bit different. But generally, why questions are accusatory right out of the gate. So are when questions. When are they going to get their act together? When are they, this stupid policy that's causing us to lose all this money, when are they going to change the policy? When are they going to give me a raise? When are they going to recognize all the hard work that I'm doing? When? Another one is who? Who messed this up? Who was supposed to do this job and didn't get it done? Who left the trash out by the dumpster and didn't put it inside the dumpster? Who parked there? Why did they park there? Who, why, when are they going to move their car? I mean, you get all three in the same question, right?
Mm-hmm.
Why did they park there? Who did it? And when are they going to move it? I mean, you know, it's just these derogatory approaches. And when you say who, you're inherently saying not me. When you say who did this, you're instantly going, well, it was someone else.
That's right.
That
absolutely
was responsible, not me. Positive questions, QBQ questions, start with what? What can I do? What was the problem and how can I help fix it? What are you trying to accomplish? What are you experiencing that's holding you back? What is a question that leads to an empowering response? The other empowering question is how? How can I help?
Mm-hmm.
How could I understand better? How could we communicate better? How do you do your job? Because I don't understand how you do your job. And maybe if I understand how you do your job, I can learn some things.
I can tell you, sitting here just hearing you rattle off the different examples, I'm noticing a different emotional feeling. When you were asking, you know, when are you going to do this and when are this and when are you going to do that? I mean, immediately I was feeling a little bit riled up, you know,
right.
Like I was being blamed. I'm going to be honest with you. But when you shifted and you said, how can I help? What can I do to assist you? Then from there, it made me feel like we were aligned. We were on the same team.
Sure.
And I think the key to that is that the word I was inserted into there. Because now you're asking me what you can do to help me. And I think that's the accountability side.
That's the personal responsibility.
It really is.
When you say, how can I help versus why didn't you? Two completely different sets of emotions follow that.
And I'm going to tell you, people need to slow down and really hear this because I think they'll glance by it. And I don't think we're aware as leaders how often we accuse people with the questions we ask and how we ask them.
Well, and that's a great point. If you want your team to start doing this, as a leader, you've got to practice this when you're communicating with your team. And it's challenging because we're just thinking about the tasks and we're going, why didn't that get done? You know, when is that going to be done? Deadlines. I mean, it, especially as high D kind of task, hard charging leaders, it's just, you're not even thinking about being mad at people necessarily. You're just thinking about the job getting done and how can we do it faster? It's more efficient, it feels like, to ask those why, when kind of questions, but it's extremely inflammatory. And so if you'll slow down and take the time and go, okay, I don't feel like where we are where we need to be. How can I help communicate what our expectations are to make sure we're all on the same page?
And I'm watching you and it's hilarious because you are a high D like I am and you're sitting there methodically thinking like you're plotting.
Work,
it
right?
does take work. And I think the tip for that is for those listening to the podcast, be intentional with your messages to your team. Be extremely intentional. And you may have to, like I did, script out my talk points where I am taking accountability and responsibility, because naturally these accusatory type questions just come very easy.
Well, it may feel clinical and mechanical at first if you're wired the way that you and I are, but over time, just like any muscle that you exercise, it gets stronger. It becomes more natural. Your team may even feel like it's clunky and awkward at first. They're going, what are you doing? Is there some kind of formula you're following here? Are you techniquing me? That's okay. Push through that. Embrace it because over time you will get a lot better at asking empowering questions and it'll just be second nature, but you've got to start somewhere. And if you're not there today, you don't want to stay in that place because that's not empowering to the team.
No, it really isn't. And so the takeaway is insert I, you know, ask questions that where you're looking, how can I help you? How can I be of further assistance to you? How can I help you do your job better?
What did I do wrong? You want to? I mean, you want to throw your team for a curve? Hey, what? As the leader, what did I do wrong here? What did I fail to communicate? You know, what did I do that caused you to really be frustrated? They'll tell you. They may, now at first they may be going, okay, what's the where's the left hook, right?
Yeah.
But they are thinking those things already. They have the answers to those questions. And so if you'll ask those questions, trust will go through the roof.
One of the other stories in there that I really enjoyed was him talking about the story of a gentleman who was a pilot. He's flying the plane with his daughter, and all of a sudden the engine quits. And the way that he looks at his daughter, and he tells her, honey, I'm going to have to fly this plane differently. Now, what it communicated to his daughter was that he was in control, but the situation had changed. But he knew what to do, and trust was immediately there.
Yeah. You know, in business, the engine goes out every day, right? I mean, there's always something that happens in the marketplace or something internally. There's a fire that has to be put out. And as leaders, that's what we do. We're used to the engine going out and going, okay, we've got to change our approach. We've got to change our strategy. There's a new angle that we've got to take. I think we're just naturally kind of used to that. We just assume, well, that's just what we do. We solve problems. That's the job title, job description. With our team, how we communicate those things and the types of verbiage we use and the questions that we ask that communicate how we're going to tackle the situation, what I'm hearing in that story is that it really makes a difference in how they experience the change and whether they're going to be on board, whether they're going to be freaked out by it, whether they're going to be on the same side and going, hey, we can solve this together, we can do it. The language of the leader has a tremendous impact on how much the team's going to be excited
and
about it.
And that was the thing. I think the spirit in which he said that, I mean, imagine engine's gone out. He's calm. He looks over at his daughter and says, honey, I'm going to have to fly this plane differently. There's no panic. Mm-hmm. There's no freak out moment. There's this ultimate control. And the words that he used obviously communicated calm to his daughter. And you said that with leaders being mindful of their language. I think we have to be careful, especially high Ds. We get hot-headed. Mm-hmm. We get frustrated. We get angry. We can go out and do much more damage blaming people with situations than we can taking accountability.
There's two unhealthy responses when the engine goes out. And this is the healthy response. But the ones that I think we're tempted to kind of lean toward, one is freak out and wear it on your sleeve. And go, the sky is falling. We don't know what to do. This is a problem. You want everybody else to get riled up with you, and you're codependent right on their responses. The other response is that as leaders, we think, okay, we don't want to drain everybody and freak them out. So let's wear it all internally. Let's act like we've got everything together. Let's be Pollyanna. Let's smile all the time. Let's go, hey, things are fine. Things are great. When inside your head, you are freaking out. And so I think great leaders have this gift and this ability to involve the team and communicate the fact that there is a problem, there is a challenge. We're not going to be delusional about this, but we're communicating about it in a way that is empowering and proactive. It's not freaking out. It's not negative. It's not causing the team to freak out. It's getting everybody to be aware this is reality. This is the truth about the situation that we're in. Now, what can we do about it?
I think when you were talking, another one that pops in my mind, option number three, is why is this happening to us? The victim mentality.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we hear a lot of that in corporate America today. The woe is me. And I don't think leaders are aware that when you do that, what you're telling your team is that we don't have a plan. We are a victim. So let's muddle here for a while and whine instead of working toward a solution.
I heard somebody say that the quality of your leadership is 20% how you communicate about positive things and 80% how you communicate about negative things.
Wow. That is powerful.
And it's challenging to communicate about negative things. But people are looking to you. When it's positive, it's easy. Anybody can congratulate somebody when they're doing a good job. Anybody can point to good numbers and go, hey, we're winning. You know, that's what the masses can do. It takes a leader to take a negative situation and turn that into a positive situation based on the way and the language and how they're involving people in that conversation.
Daniel, for you as a leader here, can you tell me in a couple of statements, what has this book meant to you personally?
For me, it's challenged me to work like it all depends on me, but to communicate and build relationships as if I can't do it without the team. And to treat everything that the team does as this is bonus, this is extra, that my expectations are such that when somebody helps and does something good that makes my job easier, that's an exciting thing. That's a privilege. That's a blessing to have somebody who would come in, take time away from their family and help us do something here. Yes, we're paying them. You know, yes, that's what they're supposed to do. But if that's my mindset, I'm going to get the minimum performance. I'm going to get, you know, minimum pay for minimum performance. And if my mindset, my attitude is thanking somebody for going above and beyond and not expecting and mandating that that's what happens all the time, expecting that of myself and letting the expectation kind of come through me going first on that and outworking and out hustling and setting the bar high with not with my words, but with my actions, then eventually everybody gets excited and gets on board with that. And I've got people on my team. I know they've told me, I'm trying to outwork you. I'm trying to get more done than you. And I love that. And I love that there's this competitive thing, but it's not because I came in and I said, you have to do this or you don't get to stay. What I did was I went and I tried to outwork everybody else first. And I thanked them when they did something that was above and beyond. And so I think it's just that different perspective of, you know, compared to, hey, I'm the boss. You work hard, do everything that I told you to do because I'm paying you to do it. And when they do something that's above and beyond, instead of stopping and throwing a party, going, well, yeah, of course that's what you're supposed to do. That's so disempowering. And your top performing people won't stay with you if that's the culture. And so that's essentially what it's meant for me and how it's encouraged me, I guess, as a leader to really act like it's all on me and it's my responsibility.
I think for me, as I look at it, the whole area of accountability, I think there are two levels. Number one, I'm accountable for my results. You know, I mean, at the end of the day, I either did it or I didn't. And I have to make sure that I'm working hard enough to beat the ref, to overcome those obstacles that I can't control by making sure that I'm controlling my attitude, my outlook, and my performance. And I think the other side of it is that I'm accountable to my team. You know, I brought these people on. They're working with me to either pull off an event or do an event out on the road. And I'm accountable to the customers that are coming to attend, the clients. And I want them to have a high level of experience. I want them to do well. And I think the more you include the team in the words that you use, not assigning blame and not allowing them to have a victim mentality, it makes everyone raise their game to another level. And I think if we all raise our game to another level, there's nothing a team can't accomplish.
I agree.
Well, Daniel, thank you for taking the time to come in and join us. We had an opportunity to really dig in to the QBQ, the question behind the question by John Miller. Love the book. If you'd like more information about the book, go to QBQ.com. Now, Daniel, I know this month is a special month. We're doing things a little bit different. Tell us about what's going on EntreeLeadership.com.
Well, we're really excited about this. EntreeLeadership.com has a lot of free content and conversations taking place with entree leaders encouraging each other around how to grow themselves and grow their teams and facing, you know, different leadership challenges and solutions being talked about there. And then there's all access, and that's a premium level of EntreeLeadership.com. Normally it's $300 a month, and with that you get coaching with our team, you get webinars every Friday, where it's e-coaching sessions. You get the entire Entree Leadership Master Series video library, which is for a long time the only format we had that in was Dave Ramsey personally teaching that content in a week-long kind of boot camp session. And so now all of that is on video and available and all access. And so for $300 a month, you get all these features as well as getting plugged into a mastermind group. So we're really excited about all access. And for March, when somebody registers for all access in March, we're going to take off $30 a month for the first year of their membership. And we're going to give them all four books that we're talking about this month on the podcast. So the QBQ book that we talked about today, The Go-Getter, which we'll be talking about, Who Moved My Cheese, and The Go-Giver. Sounds like The Go-Getter, but it's different. All of those books are going to be sent out to anybody that registers in the month of March for the All Access. And we take off $30 a month. So that's the best way to stay plugged into this lifeline that we've created that's designed to help business leaders stay connected to our team, get practical coaching advice from our experts, as well as the community of entree leaders who they're in the mastermind groups with, and get the whole Entree Leadership Master Series video library. An incredible deal. Just go to entreleadership.com and register for all access. You can try it for a month. You don't have to get locked into some long-term thing. But be sure when you're registering to put in the promo code READERS, all lowercase, R-E-A-D-E-R-S, and they'll get all four books we're talking about and $30 off for every month that they're in for the first year.
Sounds like an incredible deal. For those of you in the Dallas area, we did want to let you know that we are coming to town March 28th for the Entree Leadership one-day event.
Yeah, and so Dave teaches this, a full day of Dave. You're going to teach a lesson. Dave's daughter's going to teach, and that's a huge event.
We have a lot of fun, and I'm telling you, if you're in the area, bring your leaders, bring your team. It's an opportunity to get fired up and get more understanding of what we're all about. So listen, stay plugged into this Entree Leadership stuff. Keep learning and keep leading. And until next time, grow yourself, grow your team, grow your profits.